seems to lighten up the room a bit. Thank you for saying that.
It's the truth,
Coop says, rubbing his face against the side of my head.
And to answer your question, it's going to be as many times as we can manage before you have to leave.
I push at Coop's arms a little so they loosen, and I turn my body to face his. This causes his dick to slide out of me, and I know he'll be getting up soon to take care of the condom. Or, at least I remember he used to do that. When we're face to face, I tell him with a grin, "This trip has turned out to be one of the best ideas I've had in a long time."
"Oh, you haven't seen anything yet,"
he tells me, and his words have an erotically ominous tone.
"The things I'm going to do to you, well, you might not ever want to crawl out of my bed."
My entire body shivers over the promise, and I mentally start calculating how many days I have left before I need to get back to reality. If I don't do the movie with Brad, I've got a few months, and spending them in Coop's bed doesn't seem like a bad idea at all. Coop walks back into the bedroom. He's gone to dispose of the condom, and when he walks back in, I can't help but stare at his magnificence. His body is lean and sculpted. He has some light chest hair that stops just below his pecs, while his abdomen is sleek and rippled. His thighs are powerful, and his dick is, well, it's big, even when it's not all the way big. It makes me smile when I remember that night I lost my virginity to him and that it wasn't the best experience because it hurt like hell. But we tried again a few nights later, and it didn't hurt. And it was fantastic. Not as fantastic as what we just did, because 14 years ago, I would have never even thought to do what we just did. It was wild, uninhibited, and so passionate, I'm not sure our 18-year-old selves were confident enough to carry that off.
"Ready to go fishing?"
Coop asks as he brings one knee to the mattress and climbs up my body. When he left the bed moments ago, I'd rolled to my back and haven't moved since. My body is a wet noodle. I reach my hands over my head and lengthen my arms, stretching while I nod. "Yeah, you know I love fishing." But Coop's eyes are lowered, and his gaze is pinned to my breasts. He goes to his knees and pushes my legs a little wider, letting his gaze travel down from my breasts to my stomach and my pelvis. One finger comes out to slide over my mound softly. He doesn't take his eyes off it, but murmurs to me,
"That's different."
I raise my head and look down to my bare waxed skin. "Yeah, that's different," I chuckle. "I got waxed for the Sports Illustrated shoot. Loved it so much, I've kept it up."
"I love it too."
Coop's voice has a low rumble of complete appreciation I feel vibrate through my body. I cry out in surprise when his hands go under my thighs and he raises my legs, pushing out to spread me wide. His eyes remain fixed between my legs. "Coop!" I call out in embarrassment, my hands coming to try to push him from my legs. No one has ever studied me like that.
"Don't,"
he says, almost harshly, but then reverently.
"I want to look at you. You're absolutely fucking beautiful."
I sigh, completely relaxing my body and trusting in this because, well, it's Coop. Finally, he lowers my legs and brings his gaze back to my face.
"We're going to hold off on the fishing for a bit."
"Why?" I ask, puzzled. His eyes sweep down my body slowly, then back up again.
"Because I'm not ready to stop touching this yet. And honest to God, Eden, I need to taste you, too. My mouth is fucking watering."
"Oh." I breathe out softly, and a shudder runs up my spine. Coop takes his time running his mouth over my body, and there isn't a place he misses. I think I might die when he lifts a leg, runs his mouth down the back of my thigh, and then bites me on the edge of my butt, right where it meets the crease of my thigh. His eyes rise, grab mine, and he promises,
"This ass will be mine, in every way you can imagine."
I totally don't know what that means, but all I know is that pleasure courses through me at the possibilities. Then his mouth is between my legs. My skin is so sensitive to his lips and tongue, and his fingers slip inside of me, curl and stretch. He groans from my taste, and it rumbles all the way through me. He laps at me lightly, tongues me viciously, and devours me completely. He roams all over me, making passes over parts of my body he's already loved, and then he comes back to those places that are guaranteed to make me shatter. He makes me come twice before he's finished. Then he fucks me again. This time I'm on my back, my legs are on his shoulders, and my ass is suspended off the bed. He goes fast, hard and deep, and races to the finish line. With his skillful fingers plucking at my clit while he delves into me, I come again just mere seconds before he does. He throws his head back, muscles and tendons in his neck tightened, and practically snarls out his release. We collapse again, breathing heavily and our blood still racing. Another trip to dispose of the second condom, and Coop is climbing back in bed with me. "We going fishing?" I ask him, still breathless from those amazing orgasms.
"It's almost lunchtime," he says,
and my head pops up off the pillow to look at his bedside clock. I turn to look at him, aghast. "We just spent almost 3 hours in bed. How is that even possible?"
"I'm pretty sure I spent over an hour just eating your pussy that last time," he says, smugly.
My head hits the pillow, and I can't help the smile that appears. That was so damn amazing. Sliding my arm across the mattress, I take Coop's hand and give it a squeeze. He turns his head to face me, a well-satisfied smile on his face. He squeezes my hand back. "We really didn't know what we were doing back when we were younger, did we?" I ask him, seriously. Coop bursts out laughing, rolls over, and kisses me hard.
"I think we've learned a few things since then."
When his mouth leaves mine, I grin at him. "Best rebound sex ever." He cocks an eyebrow at me.
"You've had a lot of rebound sex."
"Nope," I tell him truthfully, while grinning at him slyly. "Which is why this is the best ever."
"You're not helping my ego here, Eden,"
Coop grumbles as he peers down at me. "How about it was the best sex ever?"
"Was it?"
he asks skeptically. I hedge, even though fuck yes, it was the best ever, but he doesn't need to know that. "I might need further research."
"You mean with me, right?"
"Yes, with you," I assure him.
"Let's go eat lunch first. I'm starving, and the fish won't be biting until dusk."
"Okay," I say with a groan as I roll to the edge of the bed and stand up. My body feels deliciously used. It's a feeling I could get used to.
Chapter 12. I supplied grist for the gossip mill. Coop. "I'm not so sure this is a good idea," Eden says as I pull into a parking space in front of the pit stop. I get where she's coming from. She told me on the way over here how cold everyone was to her when she came in yesterday. "I'll set the record straight," I assure her as I shut off the engine. Turning to face her, I reach across the cab of my truck and tuck a lock of hair behind her ear. It's still damp, as we took a shower together not all that long ago, which turned into another amazing round of hard sex, which is making this not so much lunch, but more of a pre-dinner snack. "It'll be fine." "What?" she asks dubiously. Are you going to stand up in the middle of the diner and make a proclamation I'm not the bitch everyone thinks I am? If you want me to, I will. Her eyebrows rise and her mouth turns down in horror. God, no, I don't want you to do that. I don't want any attention at all, for that matter. I'd actually feel better if we just got some food and took it home to eat. Eden, I tell her softly, sliding my hand around the back of her neck and drawing her a little closer to me. This is your hometown. You should be comfortable here. People are going to find out they were wrong, and it will be fine. But until we can get the word out, you will walk in that diner with me with your head held high. I'll, of course, be strutting with my chest all stuck out because I've got a swimsuit model on my arm. Eden snorts and playfully punches me in the stomach. I'm an award-winning actress, I'll have you know. I totally need to watch your movies, I tell her with a smile. You haven't watched any of my movies? She asks, astounded. I give her what I hope is a charming grin. Nope, but I did ogle the Sports Illustrated issue. Eden rolls her eyes, but I stop it before she can complete a full circle by saying, I didn't want to watch your movies because it only confirmed you made the right decision to leave and pursue your dreams. That sort of stuck in my craw, if you know what I mean. Her face goes soft before her eyes become sad. I'm sorry. To this day, it's still the hardest choice I've ever had to make. I'm not sorry, I tell her truthfully, and she blinks at me in surprise. Look at what you accomplished. But at what cost? She murmurs. The answer is easy. The loss of young love was the sacrificial price, Eden. It hurt us both, but it wasn't the end of the world for us either. We both moved on, and we're both all right. This is some heavy shit, and Eden's eyes become sadder. I have to bring it back to the funny. Of course, you did hook up with that douchebag, so I can't say it was really all right for you, I say slyly. Eden's eyes immediately lighten, and she laughs. I've got two words for that. Ashley Barton. Touché, I say, before I pull her even closer to me to kiss her. When I release my hold, I ask, You ready to walk into the pit stop with me, and we'll get everyone to talking about us? Eden tilts her chin up, straightens her shoulders. Sure. Let's go turn this joint upside down with the gossiping that's going to start when we walk in. I get out of the truck and Eden waits for me to open the door for her. It's not because she's being a diva and expects it, but because she knows I have to do it. It's a southern thing. It's the way I was raised. You open doors for ladies, and I'd always opened Eden's car door to let her in and out when we were dating years ago. We start walking toward the front door of the pit stop, and I have a moment of awkward indecision. Eden and I just fucked our brains out for the better part of half a day. I've known her for most of my life, and yet at this moment, I have no clue what we are to each other. Should I take her hand and hold it, or do I keep a distance between us? My initial instinct is to maintain that distance, because, as we both discussed earlier, this thing has a time limit on it. While there's no way I could ever keep Eden removed from me the way I have all other women given our history, I'm not sure affectionate actions are a wise idea. Regardless, my decision is taken out of my hands when Eden's phone starts chiming madly. She digs into her purse and pulls it out as we walk up to the restaurant, and thus there's no opportunity for me to hold her hand. As I open the door for her, she walks in with her head bent over her phone, scanning what looks to be texts. She doesn't see it as we enter, but I do. Everyone's heads swing our way and jaws drop. Because it's mid-afternoon, the diner isn't packed, but there's still a decent-sized crowd. This is the most popular place to eat, and there's always a brisk business. I take Eden by the elbow to steer her to an empty booth, and she lifts her head. I can feel her stiffen slightly under my touch as she sees everyone taking her in. I give her a squeeze of encouragement, and I can feel her relax. When we reach the booth, I wait for her to slide in first, and then surprise her when I slide in on the same side. What are you doing? She asks as she continues to scoot over to give me room. Sitting beside you, I tell her simply as I reach past her to grab two menus resting at the side of the table. protecting me, she mutters, and I suppose that's true. Besides, I like the way she smells, and I don't mind the way our legs press together. I've never minded touching Eden.
What can I get you two to drink?
Bonnie asks, and my head turns her way. She gives me a smile and then shoots a glare at Eden. Bonnie Ventura is a historical landmark in the pit stop. She's been waitressing here since I can remember, and I'd been coming in here since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. She's also the quickest way to spread gossip, outside of taking out an ad in the newspaper, which is why I wanted to come here and make a public display of acceptance of Eden. The entire town is wrong about Eden, I tell Bonnie, and she jerks slightly in surprise. I found out that Eden had no clue the school burned down and my dad died. Her mail is screened by staff, and it never got passed along to her. She didn't know her business manager approved the $500 donation to be sent. Bonnie's jaw drops. I continue. Eden has been extremely distressed since learning everyone in this town has thought the absolute worst of her these last few years. She's also distressed she didn't have the opportunity to give back to this community. Beyond that, she's heartbroken she didn't get to honor my father, a man she had a lot of care and respect for. Bonnie's eyes widen and shoot to Eden. I don't dare turn to look at Eden, but keep my eyes on Bonnie and wait for her to look at me again. When she does, I add, oh, and we'll both have sweet tea. As far as I can remember, I don't think I've ever had the power to strike someone speechless, not even with the things I did to Eden in bed today, as she still at least managed to cry out my name, which did wonders for my ego. But Bonnie just stands there and stares at me speechless, because I've just handed her the biggest, juiciest piece of gossip this town has had in a long time. And just to sweeten the pot for Bonnie, and ensure the word travels faster, I lean toward her to murmur, and between you and me, Bonnie, Ashley and I aren't seeing each other anymore. I broke it off with her last night. Bonnie's head nods furiously in understanding, as if she gets that this was part of some large cosmic game plan. She then looks to Eden, clears her throat, and says with a tentative smile,
Welcome home, Eden. This town sure is proud of you.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Eden tells her, her voice smooth as silk with a polished sheen I imagine came from years of being in the public eye.
That's very kind of you.
I bet Eden really wants to punch her and everyone else for being so rude to her yesterday.
I'll get this spread around,
Bonnie says as she looks back at me.
I mean, I'll get you sweet teas and be right back to take your order.
After Bonnie leaves us, I turn to look at Eden. She's shaking her head with a silly smile on her face.
You are too much,
she says softly. Before I can respond, her phone starts chiming like crazy again from the top of the table where she'd set it. She gives a pained sigh, picks it up, and looks at it a moment before setting it back down. If you need to respond to that, I say as my gaze cuts to her phone, then back to her. She shakes her head.
It's Brad, and I have no desire to respond to him.
I can honestly say now that Eden is a friend, and this was made possible by finally learning she had no clue about the fire or my dad dying. We have history together, and while we ended on not the greatest of terms, they weren't bad either. We've also reconnected in a very physical and intimate way. I can only assume that for all those reasons, and despite the fact we've been joking about our exes, I have a wave of jealousy overcome me as I realize Brad's reaching out to her. I just assumed he'd fade away and continue with the chick he was screwing behind Eden's back. I can't help myself by asking, "What's he want?" Rather than answer me, Eden surprises me by picking up her phone and handing it over. It's tacit permission for me to read his messages. My eyes move over the words as I use my thumb to scroll through the texts on the screen. We need to talk. I'm really sorry for what happened. My intention was never to hurt you. Can you please call me? I've left you a few voicemails. Are you getting them? I went to your house, and I know you're gone. Colleen won't tell me where you are. We really need to talk. Eden, please, Call me. I know you're reading these texts as they come in. Your phone is practically attached to your hip. Just call me. I get you're mad, and I'm sorry my anger got the best of me, too, and I said those nasty things about you, but you know how this industry works. This will be old news by next week. Please call me. I'm so sorry, and I love you too much to not give my best effort to make this work. Eden, baby, please. I've cut things off with Liliana. It was a stupid mistake, and I was just lonely from being away from you for so long filming. I will do whatever you want to make this up to you. After I finish reading the messages, I hand the phone back to Eden, and she sets it on the table. Sounds like he's really sorry and wants to give it a go to make things work. I offer hesitantly. Eden snorts. He's worried about his next film that I agreed to play a small role in. He wants my acting credibility, given my Oscar, and knows the press over Hollywood's golden couple being in a movie together will boost the film. I blink at her in surprise. Is it really that cutthroat? Not about feelings, but about business? Every single thing about this industry is nothing but business. Her tone is matter of fact, but there's an underlying bitterness there. It's a trade-off. I get to do what I love doing, but it's a very lonely profession. Everyone's trying to climb over your back and shoulders to get to the top. And you're at the top. I say softly, imagining a lot of people want to take advantage of Eden. See, that's just it, she says heatedly. I'm not at the top. I won the top award once, and even that little bit Brad wants to take advantage of. Bonnie interrupts us by bringing us sweet teas with thick wedges of lemon perched on the glass's rims. Sweet tea is the official drink of the South, and it's not adequately made unless your teeth hurt when you drink it. The pit stop's sweet tea is to die for. Here you go, sweetie pies. Now do you know what you want to eat? Arnie has his famous meatloaf on special today. That actually sounds good to me, Eden says, without having even looked at the menu. I'll have the same, Bonnie, I add. She beams a smile at me, levels an even brighter one at Eden, and then disappears to put our orders in. I turn toward Eden and lay my arm across the back of the booth just above her shoulders. I itch to touch her hair, but I don't need the gossip mill running too rampant with guesses as to what may be going on between us. Because, fuck, I have no clue myself. So what's the deal with you and Brad? I ask her. What do you mean? She lifts her tea, takes a small sip, and sighs with pleasure. You can't beat true Southern sweet tea. You don't seem overly broken up over him, I say, noting something that struck me from the moment I saw Eden pull up in front of Goodnight House. She didn't look broken at all, just weary. Eden shrugs. I guess I'm still too angry to process the hurt. Did you cry? I ask her bluntly. Excuse me? She pulls her chin back to look at me with surprise. Did you cry when you found out? I clarify. Well, yeah, I cried, she says, and I can tell she had to think about it a moment. As I ran down the red carpet, looking for my limo. Was that the only time? I push at her, and I know why this is so important for me to know the details, but damn if I don't really want them. Yes? The car ride home, she says in exasperation. What's your point, Coop? I take my gaze off her just a moment to reach out to my sweet tea. I take the lemon off the edge and toss it to the table before taking a sip. After I set the glass down, I turn a bit further in my seat so I'm facing her. When you and I broke up, there was a lot of crying on your part. Weeks of it. Eden's eyes drop to the table as she reflects on that. Eden and I didn't have an abrupt breakup. It happened over time, naturally occurring because of the distance separating us and the sudden turn in her life that pulled her away from me. We both clung to the idea of us far longer than we should have. There were weeks of phone calls where she'd be sobbing into the phone that she wanted to quit and come back, and then the next call was that she didn't want to give up the opportunity. Our last conversation, the one that ended it officially, lasted for almost 3 hours, and Eden cried during most of it. With Brad, she cried on the car ride home. That makes me feel fucking awesome, and I know I'm a schmuck for that. When Eden lifts her eyes back to me, they're slightly hardened. Shrewd, even. When I left college and started this new career, from the very start, I had no one. You had me, I point out, because we were still together. She shakes her head. No, I didn't. You were here. My grandmother pretty much cut ties with me. I was traveling the world and I had no one. I was scared and lonely. I had you by phone, and you supported me, Coop, I know that. But at the end of the day, I was alone. And do you know what happens to someone who spends that much time with just herself? I'm entranced by her words. They're hard, with a brittle edge, almost like they could shatter. I want to know the answer, but I don't. Still, I ask, what happens? I adapted, she says tonelessly. I learned to rely only on myself. My world was just me. It was the price I paid for following my dreams, and it's a hefty price. It makes you guarded and skeptical. The world turns yellow, as if my nature was completely jaundiced. I don't even know what to say. While I've tried to put Eden out of my mind and eventually did as the years passed, I just assumed she led a charmed life. I assumed she was a princess among commoners and had everything her heart desired. Eden leans into me. I'm going to admit something to you that I'm deeply ashamed of. My entire body stills, because this was not what I expected when I asked about Brad. I know Eden and I still have a deep connection. You don't share the intimacies we just did today without a strong connection and trust of each other. I realize that was always there, but the fact that she is ashamed of herself immediately sets me on edge. Eden, you don't have to... You asked what the deal was with Brad, and I'm going to tell you, she says adamantly. The truth is, I settled when I accepted his proposal. I didn't think I'd get offered anything better. We'd only been together 6 months when he proposed, and even though I had something inside of me saying it was too soon, I ignored it. I grabbed onto that ring because I was tired of being lonely. I was tired of shouldering everything in my life. I wanted someone I could rely on and rant to and share my joy with. I wanted someone to tell secrets to and who could give me some sort of security. I needed that security because being without it for so long was absolutely draining. I accepted Brad's proposal because I was just plain tired. Jesus, fuck. I can't even process this. My only experience with love was with Eden 14 years ago, when I didn't know my head from my ass. So I don't know much about it, but I know it shouldn't be like that. I was crying, Eden continues in a voice that's filled with self-loathing, because that little bit of security he gave me was better than anything I'd had in a very long time, and it was gone. I was alone again. There's a lot to take away from Eden's secret, she just told me, but the thing that seems to ring out like huge golden marquee letters announcing a revelation to me is that Eden wasn't in love with Brad. I think he was many things to her, but he wasn't her soulmate. Not in her heart, anyway. Not in his, either. Or the fucktard wouldn't have cheated on her. My hand drops from the back of the booth to palm Eden's cheek. I'm going to lean in and kiss her so she doesn't feel lonely in this moment. It's an act of intimacy I've never shared with any woman but Eden. The act of comfort. But instead, two plates of meatloaf are unloaded onto the table with Bonnie saying, "Here you go, honeys. Enjoy." Eden blinks as if she's rising out of a stupor and pulls back from me. I turn and smile at Bonnie. "Thanks. Looks great." "It sure does," Eden says, and once again her voice is smooth and polished, overly bright. I think it's an act, as she's still not quite sure she's back on good terms with people, and she just admitted to me she was going to marry a guy for security. The Eden I knew, who was self-sustaining, independent, and adventurous, would think that was a tremendous character flaw to have developed. But I let it go for right now, because we have meatloaf to eat, and a diner isn't a place to get into a deeper discussion about this.
Chapter 13. It's time to reevaluate my life. With peach sherbet cupcakes. Eden. The ringing of my phone brings me out of a dead sleep, and I raise my head from my pillow. My hair is knotted and hanging in my face, so I push it away while I reach over to the nightstand to grab my phone. It's 7:30 in the morning. I see that Colleen's calling me. Coop has kept me up most of the night, doing deliciously dirty things to me. I am in no mood to talk to Colleen, so I hit the button to send it to voicemail. Speaking of Coop, I push myself up in his bed, bringing the sheet up over my naked breasts as I look around. Almost as if it was planned, he comes walking out of the bathroom with a towel around his narrow hips. His hair is washed, but he didn't shave, and I really, really love that dark shadow of stubble. He didn't have that when we were younger.
"Morning, sunshine,"
he says, all bright-eyed and chipper. My voice is froggy with sleep when I return. "Morning." Coop grins at me and crawls onto the mattress. My eyes inadvertently drop to the gap in his towel before popping back up to his face. His grin widens as he leans over and kisses me. His breath is minty, and I hate that mine is probably rancid, but he doesn't seem to care. I run my fingers through the long mass of tangles in my hair, trying to make myself more presentable.
"I've got to run out and handle an emergency irrigation issue,"
Coop says as his hand comes up to finger the edge of the sheet covering my breasts. His eyes drop there as well.
"Probably take me about an hour."
"On a Sunday?" I ask.
"Problems don't happen only on weekdays,"
he quips. "Okay," I say, with an understanding smile. I watch him, still staring at his finger as it runs along the edge of the sheet. His eyes are hooded and warm, and I know exactly what he's thinking. "So get going." His gaze travels up slowly, and he gives me a wicked grin.
"It's not that big of an emergency. I don't have to run right out of here. I could, say, for example, crawl back under the covers with you for a little while."
I giggle and push at his chest. "I need a break. You kept me up all night." God, did he keep me up all night. He was insatiable, but then again, so was I. If he wasn't reaching for me in the dark, I was reaching for him. One time, I drifted off to sleep, only to wake to find him in me, slowly thrusting from behind. Damn, it was so amazing. He's amazing. Both different and the same, but both amazing.
"Can't get enough of you,"
Coop growls low and lowers his head to skim his lips over my collarbone. I have to struggle not to push the sheet down and demand he go lower. "I'll be here when you get back," I assure him. Preferably after a long, hot bubble bath and a thorough scrubbing of my teeth. He lifts his head and his face is inscrutable. Finally, he smiles slowly and brushes his lips against mine.
"Okay, and we can figure out when I get back what we want to do today."
Coop had told me he generally takes weekends off unless there's an emergency. I guess, like this irrigation issue, but I don't want him to assume he has to spend time with me. If you've got something else you'd rather do today, don't feel like you have to keep me entertained, I tell him, hesitantly.
"You in my bed is absolutely entertaining,"
he says, before he pushes backward off the mattress.
"But I thought maybe we could take a drive and spend the day at the beach."
I sit up further in the bed and cock an eyebrow. "I thought this was just rebound sex."
"We can have sex on the beach if you want,"
he says mischievously as he whips his towel off. My mouth goes dry and he laughs at me, eyeballing him.
Maybe you can run into town and grab us some breakfast. The fridge is pretty bare.
Yeah, sure, I say, as the idea of us spending a day at the beach together is sounding pretty fantastic. Coop walks away, bare-ass naked, out the bedroom door, presumably over to the one he's staying in to get some clothes. I go ahead and ogle, as he's admitted to doing the same of me when I was on the cover of SI. As Coop disappears out the door, my phone starts ringing again, and I turn my head to glance at it. Colleen isn't giving up. With a sigh, I go ahead and answer so I can get her off my back and enjoy the day. Colleen, it's 7:30 in the morning here, which means it's 4:30 there. For the love of God, it's a weekend. Take a break. Colleen merely grunts her disdain for my suggestion before saying, You know I don't have a personal life. You're my life, and when there's work to do, I do it, even if it's 4:30 in the morning. What could possibly be wrong at 4:30 in the morning? I ask, as I give a dramatic eye roll to Coop, who walks back into the room holding clothes in his hand. He smiles at me and walks to the bed where he tosses the clothing. He does this so I can get an up-close-and-personal view of him while he dresses, and I very much appreciate it. He starts with his boxer briefs, and they look damn good on him.
Brad's going apeshit, wondering where you are, Colleen says with frustration. Which includes calling me at 4:30 in the morning. Will you just call him?
I don't want to talk to him, I tell Colleen, continuing to stare at Coop as he pulls on a pair of jeans. His gaze narrows in on me as he listens and realizes we're probably talking about Brad. I don't know what makes me do it, but I pull the phone away from my ear and hit the speaker button so Coop can hear this conversation. I'd already admitted my dirty secret about why I said yes to Brad. He might as well hear all of it.
I'll talk to Brad when I'm not as angry, but right now, he just needs to leave me alone.
Colleen huffs with frustration, but I don't care. She insinuated herself firmly into my life when I hired her almost 8 years ago. I was drowning in the business. Colleen became my life vest, and I grabbed on hard, relying on her probably too much. She transitioned into Hollywood with me, and there's no denying she's been my right hand since then. She can be bossy and blunt, but she also keeps me on track. I'm not going to do the movie with Brad, I tell Colleen, and brace for her explosion.
What the fuck, Eden? She shouts at me. You're under contract. You're going to get sued. The press will kill you over this.
I don't care, I tell her, my voice strong and assured. I realize that Coop's come to sit on the edge of the bed, staring at me while I talk to Colleen. He's actually poised and ready to give me advice or comfort if needed.
If he wants to sue me, he can sue me. The bad press will go both ways. He needs to move on because that's what I'm doing. This is a bad decision, Colleen warns.
But it's my decision, I tell her softly. I need to make more of those, I've realized.
What's that supposed to mean?
I can tell I've totally offended her, so I tread softly. I think I've over-relied on you to take care of too many things for me. I need to be more involved in my own life and not just doing my job as an actress. That oversight with the request for the money for my middle school, that's really bothered me. I just need to be more involved in those types of things. Coop's hand goes to my thigh, covered by the sheet, and he gives me a reassuring squeeze. He doesn't like that I'm still bothered by Colleen's error. Colleen is silent a moment, but then she asks me in a very soft, very serious voice,
When are you going to do that, Eden? You spend almost 10 out of every 12 months filming. When you're filming, you work 15 hours a day on a good day and 20 on any other. You do over 100 appearances and interviews a year, fly over 100,000 miles, and you sit on 7 charity boards. You haven't taken an actual vacation since I've known you because you don't have time. So really, Eden, tell me when you're going to screen your mail.
I'm speechless. I mean,
I know I'm busy, but really, she makes it sound almost impossible to carry that lifestyle. And maybe it is. And that's why I have Colleen in my life, because who can manage buying toothpaste and toilet paper when I'm needing that time to get in a few hours of sleep each day? My eyes cut over to Coop, and his return gaze is hardened but tempered with worry. He's getting a crash course in what it means to be Eden Goodnight right now. With a sigh, I admit to Colleen, "You're right. My life is impossible sometimes. It's just, I feel out of control, and maybe I need to make some changes. Maybe cut back on the amount of movies I do." I brace again, and even squint in preparation for another blast from Colleen. In addition to keeping me on track, she drives me down that track. She knows I'm a hard worker, and she makes sure every bit of potential is squeezed out of me. Instead, she almost knocks me over when she says, "Eden, maybe you do need to make some changes. Maybe this thing with Brad was a wake-up call." "What do you mean?" I ask cautiously, almost unable to get the words out because she struck me sort of stupid. Colleen's never spoken to me with, what is that, tenderness? "I mean, Brad wasn't what you needed in your life," she says. And I can't help my eyes. They slice to Coop again. He's standing up from the bed now, pulling on a t-shirt, covering his amazing chest and abs. "Now you have to figure out what you do need, and then we'll go from there." God, that was good advice. "Thank you, Colleen," I say, my voice husky with emotion. "Don't you fucking cry on me," she warns. "I don't have time for it. Now, do me a favor and call that rat bastard so he stops calling me. I'll let the appropriate people know you're backing out of the film. We'll talk soon." "Okay," I say, still emotional from a kindness I've not seen from her in all these years. She's giving it to me when I need it most. "Talk soon." When I disconnect the call, Coop smiles at me wryly.
"She's a piece of work."
"That she is," I agree, as I tap my phone to my chin in contemplation. I think she might be right. This thing with Brad, it's a catalyst to reevaluate my life. I've worked really damn hard in the last 14 years of my life. Maybe I need to lighten the load.
"So, we're still on to go to the beach?" Coop asks.
"Yeah, we are," I tell him as I start to get out of the bed so I can grab a shower. "I'll be ready to go in 2 hours. A few things I have to take care of first."
"Don't get out of that bed,"
he says gruffly, and I halt, one leg on the floor as I turn to look at him over my shoulder. He grins at me, his eyes dropping to my now naked breasts as the sheet sits on my lap.
"Stay under the covers until I leave. I don't need the temptation to stay."
Laughing, I pull the sheet back up and wait for Coop to leave before I get out of bed. I stopped at the grocery store and bought some pastries from the bakery there. I then reached out to Brad. I know Colleen said to call him, but I didn't have it in me to listen to his excuses. I totally did not want to hear him beg. Not that I'd give in to him, but afraid I'd vomit in the rental car and owe a fee. So I sent him a text. "Please stop calling and texting me. I've got nothing to say. It's over and nothing will change." The asshole immediately responded, "Baby, please, just give me 5 minutes to explain." I didn't respond, then blocked his phone number. Problem solved, and I hoped Colleen would be proud of the way I was taking charge of my life. The last thing I do before heading back to Goodnight House to meet up with Coop for our beach day is a stop by Missy's Cupcake Gallery. She comes in from the back of the store when she hears the bells chime above her door as I enter. Her expression is guarded, but she smiles.
"Hey."
"I'm so sorry," I tell her, without any preamble. I was such a bitch to you the other night at Tilly's. I was angry at Ashley and took it out on you, and you'd been nothing but nice and kind to me. Please, say you forgive me. She doesn't say anything for a moment, but then reaches into the case in front of her, pulling out a cupcake.
Here, try this. It's vanilla with a peach sherbet icing I'm trying out.
So I'm forgiven? I ask, in obvious relief, as I take the cupcake from her.
Totally, she says, with a laugh. Ashley rattled me that night, and her spite wasn't even directed at me. You're completely forgiven.
But you knew why the town was mad at me, I press her as I start to peel the paper from the bottom of the cupcake. I'm eating this now.
I did,
she admits, as she leans on the counter with her forearms. But I try not to take stock in gossip. I like to get my info from the source. Well, that's a breath of fresh air in a small southern town, I quip, before taking a bite of the cupcake. I'm not a big fruity cake type of person, but holy cow. Heaven. I moan in delight and Missy grins.
Yeah, she continues. I don't like gossip, but I did hear a very interesting tale yesterday.
What's that? I ask, my mouth full of cupcake.
Heard a few things, she says, her eyes sparkling with amusement. First, that Coop broke things off with Ashley. Second, that you came into the pit stop with Coop and you looked awful cozy. And third, and most important, there's sort of an oral memorandum floating around town that everyone was wrong about you. That you were screened by your peeps from news of the fire and had no clue it even happened. Word is that Coop was very insistent that your name be cleared immediately.
I swallow what's in my mouth, and before I take the next bite, I tell Missy,
all true.
Except the cozy part. Was he cozy with me at the pit stop? He sat on the same side as me, had a close, intimate-looking conversation with me.
Yeah, that's cozy. All true.
I take another huge bite of the deliciousness in my hand. While I chew, Missy tells me something that makes me smile around the mouthful.
You should have seen Coop after you ran out of Tilly's. He turned on Ashley and called her out, told her the way she treated you was not fucking cool. I knew right then it was over between them.
I swallow again, and then forget about the cupcake for a minute to indulge in a little gossip. For research purposes only.
So, what was the deal with Coop and Ashley?
I ask quietly. Not that anyone else is in the shop to hear us. Missy shrugs.
Same as any woman Coop turns his attention to. He's faithful, but he's not overly attentive. A few dates here and there, and I hate to say it, I suspect he's just in it for the sex. But the women don't seem to complain when his attention is on them. They never last long. The women, that is. Few months, tops, and Ashley was reaching her expiration date anyway.
Huh, I say pensively as I think about this Coop that Missy is describing. I can't judge him harshly for his lack of wanting anything deeper than just sex. I've had sex with the man, and I'd so be satisfied with just that.
Well, no, not for the long run.
But that's because I know Coop. I know the soul behind the amazing body, and it's a good thing we live on opposite sides of the country. Too much exposure to him will have me wanting more, and that could be dangerous. For a moment, I actually empathize with Ashley. Then I remember the things she called me, and the moment is over. I'm heading out to the beach with Coop for the day, I tell Missy, as I start to head for the door.
Do you have any interest in a girls' night out again? My treat to make up for the other night. Dinner tonight, say, around 7?
I get a bright smile in return.
7 sounds perfect.
I cram the rest of the cupcake into my mouth, think to say thank you to her again, which comes out as a thankpuh, and head out the door. It's going to be a great day.
Chapter 14. The Things You Can Get Away With in the Ocean. Coop. I roll my head to the left and look at Eden. Whereas I have my trifold beach chaise positioned for me to sit in it like a chair, Eden has hers completely flat, and her long, gorgeous body covered in suntan oil is on full display because her bikini is minuscule. At first I was boggled when she stepped out of her shorts and pulled her t-shirt over her head once we got everything set up on the beach. I'd brought the two chairs and a small cooler with some beer and water and was opening it when she stripped down to that bikini. It's simple. Black. Four triangles of material held together with strings that barely cover her breasts, pussy, and luscious ass. The sun spilled golden light over that body, and I felt amazed and awed to be looking at it. Eden caught me looking at her and told me to pick my jaw up off the sand. Right now, her eyes are closed behind her sunglasses, and I have free access to just look. Not sure why I need to, because over the last 24 hours I've touched and stared at her body up close and personal. I've seen parts of her body I bet she's never seen so clearly. But it's different right now, because I can take the time to appreciate the differences between the 18-year-old Eden I'd loved intimately and the more mature but still stunningly beautiful Eden who's here right now. Her breasts are fuller, soft, perfectly rounded, 100% Eden. I've found out her nipples are very sensitive, something I don't think I knew all those years ago. Her muscles are more toned, sleek. She obviously works out. Her skin is velvety soft, not a change from when she was younger, but the fragrance of her lotion is different. It's more mature. I think back then she smelled like peaches and cream. Now she smells like sin and spice. "You're staring at me?" Eden murmurs without opening her eyes. "How do you know that?" I ask her in disbelief. I can see her eyes are still closed from the side of her sunglasses, long lashes laying against the delicate skin below. She shrugs and turns to face me. Now the glasses prevent me from seeing her eyes, but I can tell by the smile she's wearing that she's got them open and they're smiling too. "I think it's a famous thing. People stare at me a lot. I can feel it." "That doesn't sound good," I commiserate. "You get used to it," she says nonchalantly. But then my dick jerks in my board shorts when she says, "But you staring at me is really disconcerting. Makes me think all kinds of dirty things." I groan and roll my head back, looking out at the ocean. "Don't start that here, Eden. I don't want to be sporting a hard-on with every person here on the beach looking at you." "Now that's an exaggeration," she says with a laugh. Maybe so, but I know every dude within eyesight is staring at her, as well as those with their girlfriends or wives who could never rock that bikini Eden's wearing. The caveman in me wants to pound my chest and roar to all of them that she was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and the other part of me wants to throw a blanket over her and cover her from head to foot so no one can see what's mine. Wait. What? I did not just go there. Eden is not mine. Not for the long term, anyway. "I'm going to get in the water," she says as she stands up from her chair. "Want to come?" "Sure," I say, pushing myself up. She holds her hand out and I take it without hesitation or awkwardness. It feels right. It's midsummer and the water is warm. The ocean is relatively calm today with small waves no more than a few feet high. We walk out into the water, letting them crash against our legs until we get deeper and can dive under them. Finally, we find a place where we can just tread water and float, letting the salt water buoy us. "Tell me about what you're doing now," Eden asks as we face each other while we tread water. "Obviously you took over the business from your dad." I nod. Eden's known from the time we started dating that I was going to make my career in landscape maintenance. The difference was I went to college and got a design degree to add a new element to the business. "The business has definitely grown over the last 10 years or so. I tell her as I move my arms back and forth in the water and kick my feet slowly. We're out enough the waves don't break on us, and I feel a million miles from the rest of the world. Dad kept the maintenance part growing, and I branched out with the design, but it was slow growing that service. Why is that? She asks. Not a lot of people around Newberry that need design services. It's more of a niche market for the well-to-do. Even the most basic designs for just new plantings run around $10,000. Add in man-made structures or water features and, well, not everyone can afford it. So you went outside of Newberry? She guesses. I've been all over Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina with the work I've done. But now it's pretty much word of mouth and I can pick and choose which projects I want to take on. I'm really impressed, Coop, she says softly. You followed your dreams and really made your mark on the world. I should say the same to you. I pull my arms hard through the water and swim the few feet toward her. My arms go around her waist and hers loop up over my shoulders to clasp behind my neck. Our legs brush against each other as we kick to tread water. Her hair is slicked back and her face is a study of perfection with her high cheekbones, full-as-fuck lips, and emerald green eyes. There's a reason she was a supermodel. You're the one who's made her mark on the world, Eden. But then again, I always knew you would. You're an impactful woman. Her lips curve up hesitantly, as if she's afraid to accept the compliment. I'm not sure anyone has said something so nice to me before. I smirk and give her a small eye roll. No, I'm serious, she says with a laugh. I mean, sure, people call me beautiful and a great actress, but no one has ever said I was impactful. I'd rather make a tiny difference to someone than be held to a beauty standard. I don't respond, because I can't admit to her out loud how impactful she was to me. I can diminish what we had by saying it was young love and it was short-lived, so really, what did it matter in the grand scheme of things? But the truth is, the younger Eden I'd fallen in love with changed my world in such a way that no one else could ever measure up to her. People in town think me a man-whore, and I probably am, but when it comes down to it, I've been ruined for anything but Eden. Losing her hurt in a way that I was never able to fully recognize until right this moment as I'm holding her in my arms and floating in the Atlantic Ocean. So because I can't tell her those words, because we agreed this was rebound sex and we each have our own lives apart from one another, I do the next best thing. Actually, it's the better thing. It always will be. I kiss her. Eden opens up to me without hesitation, angling her head to accept my tongue from the start. It's a deep, claiming, and thoroughly unapologetic kiss, expressing the desire I have for her. She responds by rolling her tongue against mine and moaning into my mouth. My dick responds, swelling thickly as her legs come around my waist. My legs scrabble and kick, propelling us a little closer to the shore as we kiss. I need balance, and we're still well beyond the break when I can finally punch my feet down into the sand for some stability. Our kiss is sexually blatant, if anyone was looking, and there are dozens and dozens of people lying on the sand. Several are in the water with us, but none are within earshot. Still, we're putting on a show for sure, and I couldn't care less. In an effort to pull Eden closer, my hands drop to her ass, bringing my cock right to the V in her legs. She groans when I grind her down on me, and her fingers slide into my hair, where she grips it hard. I pull my mouth back slightly just to tell her, I would kill to fuck you right now. Condom? She mutters, and I grunt an acknowledgement of the problem before I start kissing her again. Tonight, I am going to make her scream so loud the neighbors a mile down the road will hear. It will be an exercise in patience, but worth the wait. Doesn't mean, however, that I can't do something else, and since the water is just below her neckline, we have a bit of privacy for what could happen down below. Moving one hand further under her butt to balance her against me, I move the other to slip down the front of her bikini. The move is so sudden that Eden bucks and tears her mouth from mine. My index finger is in deep before she can even focus on my face. God, Coop! She gasps as I pull it out and push it back in again. What are you doing? I'm going to make you come.